You are listening to episode 76, Parent Play Therapy Consultation, with your host, Jackie Flynn.
Welcome to Play Therapy Community Podcast, providing connection, information, and inspiration to child therapists all around the world. Here's your host, a licensed psychotherapist, a registered play therapist, and my mom, Jackie Flynn.
This episode is brought to you by EMDR and Play Therapy Integration Support. Are you an EMDR-trained therapist that works with children and teens? I'd love to help you integrate play therapy techniques throughout all eight phases so that your child and teen clients can fully experience the immense healing power of EMDR therapy. Visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com to check out my free webinars, EMDRIA-approved courses, certification opportunities, case consultation options, individual and group, and much more. Children are not miniature adults, so working with them in a developmentally appropriate way can make a world of difference. Again, visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com.
Hi there, Jackie Flynn here from Play Therapy Community Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us in this episode. I am so excited to share with you all about parent consultation today. Well, at the time of this recording, it's mid-September. Pumpkin stuff is out and the kids are back at school. And we are all kind of wondering how things are going to go with this COVID-19 situation. So everybody has a little bit of uncertainty, and with uncertainty feels kind of unsafe to a certain degree, and it can leave people unsettled. I've had so many parent consultations recently, and I really lean into the process. I feel really confident with my parent consultations. So I'm making this episode following one of my webinar trainings that you may or may not have heard recently, but I want you to feel as competent and confident with your parent consultations as well. So in the beginning, I did not feel that way. In the beginning, I would feel maybe that struggle of just keeping my parents engaged in the process. I started off in community mental health after I was a school counselor. And then I moved into private practice. And as I moved into private practice, I would feel a little bit frozen when I was talking to parents. Imposter syndrome would sneak up every once in a while as I would think, who am I to share parenting advice when I struggle with the same thing? So that part can leave you feeling kind of nervous for sure. Also, I felt overwhelmed with parent messages and calls, and it was really taking away my capacity to fully be there for my clients because these calls were frequent and they were going on and on and on. So community mental health did vary a lot from private practice. Wherever you are in whatever setting that you work in is going to influence your parent consultation experience. So know that what you hear me share here may or may not apply to you, or you may need to adapt it to your situation. So let's start off with that initial phone call. That first phone call of I'm looking for therapy for my kid. Usually they say something like, my child needs someone to talk to, or they need coping skills. Those are two of the main ones that I hear. So what I do is I just kind of sit back and I listen to that narrative for about 2 or 3, maybe 4 minutes and really get a good feel for the situation. And if they continue to go on, I may just pause them and say, okay, so what I hear you saying, and then I will summarize it in a few sentences, and then I'll ask any questions and really determine if I'm a good fit for that client or not. I may not be a good fit if I don't have the training or the resources or the time to meet their needs. Then what I do is I refer out. That is an option in my work. It may or may not be in your work. But I do have a list of colleagues and a list of organizations, agencies that can accommodate pretty much anyone that I have came across so far. So I will share with them that referral information if they are referred. If it's someone I feel like I'm a good fit and I can work with and I have space in my schedule, then I will listen more and then I will kind of explain my role. I'll answer any of their questions and I'll say, you know, we're more kind of like partners. I'm not in charge of you and I'm not just working with the child. We're going to work together. We're going to collaborate. So this will be my role and this is what I'll need you to do. And in that part, I'm very clear in the part where we just need to work together. So I'll need to communicate with you about 15 minutes a week for the first 3 weeks. Then after that, we will chat every 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it may be. That way they know that it's not a hands-off, but there are boundaries around it. I think about that metaphor of the lifeguard. When a lifeguard is getting trained in many places, they will try to help someone, but if they're truly drowning in distress, the person may climb up on their head and just push them down trying to save themselves. It's like a natural human reaction. So our parents will do this too sometimes. So we need to keep them at enough distance to where we can help them, but they don't drown us in the process. I love that lifeguard metaphor. Also the flight attendant metaphor, as we hear so much in our field, of make sure you put your oxygen mask on yourself before you do others, thinking that you have to be well, you need to keep yourself well so you can continue to help others. That's where that is based in. Now, that I will explain to them, if we're scheduling the first session, the Greatness Sticks activity. Now, if you haven't heard of the Greatness Sticks activity, you are in for such a treat. That's with Tammy Van Hollander. You go to YouTube and search up Tammy Van Hollander, and she teaches you about the Greatness Sticks, how to use popsicle sticks and a Sharpie, or you can print them out and put these positive words on them and do an activity. When I started this, it was a game changer. So incredible. Now she has these little, this little product. They look like little game pieces with the words already printed on them. I do have to say that the kids like them better, but I use these sticks for so many years too, so they like them as well. So you don't have to have any prepared product. You can literally make this yourself for like $2 and have them finished in about 4 minutes, or you can buy her little pieces, which are also great. But I tell them about that Greatness Sticks activity and explain to them that it's a strength-based activity and resist the urge to bring up anything negative, and that'll help the child to trust me and feel more open and know that I see the positive in them. So after that, I will explain play therapy to them. There's a lot of misconceptions about play therapy. I would say for years, I knew what it was as a clinician, as a child therapist, as a registered play therapist, but I couldn't articulate it in a way that a potential client's parent would be able to understand what it is. So basically, it's important that you educate yourself on what play therapy is and what it helps with. If you haven't done so yet, I highly recommend reading Schaefer and Drew's book, The Therapeutic Powers of Play, 20 Core Agents of Change. That book is incredible. And there's also on the Association for Play Therapy's website, there's really clear clarification. They have an entire page dedicated to understanding the therapeutic powers of play, what it can help with. They really drill down and spell it out there. Get really familiar with that so that when you are speaking to your parents that you can dispel some of those myths, as well as really let them know what play therapy is. So play therapy sometimes is thought of as a way to get the kid to open up and talk, or a way that the kid can relax or playing so they can then get the actual therapy done, which is false. The actual therapy is in the play. The play is very therapeutic. It can help with self-esteem, communication, their flexibility, emotional regulation. It can help with problem solving, relationships, social wellness, their resilience, stress management, their behavior, focus. It can help with so many things. You want to be able to describe that to parents in a very succinct, direct way so they can really believe in the process and understand one of the big things that I want the people that I work with that I'm just describing play therapy to walk away with is that children are not miniature adults. Children are people that have developing brains and using traditional approaches that are based heavily on words and conceptualization is very limiting. So the play is how the child processes through their situation. When we set up our playroom or we create our toy kit, it's very intentional. We don't just put any toys in there. We make sure we have nurturing, expressive, aggressive toys in there, and then we have a process, a therapeutic process that we work with them reflecting content and their emotions and just really connecting with them in a deep way. I don't necessarily go into detail about tracking and all the different techniques because some of that is pretty jargony, but I do want them to know that the actual therapy is in the play. Also in the beginning stages of working with a parent, I'll send them the link to Dr. Siegel's Handy Model of the Brain, and that gives them an understanding of how the brain works. When you know how the brain works, then you can influence what it does. One thing that I love about that video is that there's this kind of analogy to flipping your lid, really going offline. So it helps parents to gauge what to do when, not to kind of get into lecture mode when your child is upset because it's going to make it worse rather than better. There's all kinds of reasons why that Handy Model the Brain video and concept works. Also, in one of the earlier stages of working with a parent, not necessarily that first phone call, but I will instruct them about the concept of the window of tolerance, how we have a green zone, that's the optimal function, red zone, that's the hyper-aroused, and the blue zone, hypo-aroused. So I'll describe that to them here lately. I just, at the time of this recording, I just came out with my book. I'm so excited about it. It's called In My Body, I Feel, and it's a book about the felt sense of emotion, somatic awareness, and in there, I talk about the window of tolerance in a kid-friendly way. So I will usually either give them a book or point them where to get it. Also, I do structure the parent consultation around my situation, not theirs. I make sure I hold true to boundaries of what I can do, what I can't do, as far as scheduling wise. Now, what I'm describing, what I do, may be so different than what you do. You may work in a hospital setting. You may work in a school setting. You may work in residential. There's so many different placements, right? So I work in a private practice, and this is how I do it. So I do tell them up front the frequency and the length of time. So what I like to do is I work with parents in between sessions for a 15 to 20 minute time block. After your child goes to bed, usually I do like to have those late evenings so that I can really make those 15 to 20 minutes pretty powerful. Then after the third week, we start to space it out, and we may chat every 2 weeks for a while, then every 3 weeks. So that's what I do, but what you do may be different, and that's okay, but you do want to make sure that you're not shooting from the hip and just kind of letting it take it over. When you plan it, then it feels so much more organized, and organized can feel safer. That'll help foster engagement too. When your client feels like they are, or your client's parent feels like they're part of the process, then they are more likely to be able to follow through on some of these things that you're sharing with them. Some things you may be discussing are parenting strategies or different resources that they may have. You may discuss how certain things work that they may not know of, such as contacting the school for a problem-solving meeting, for the response intervention, just a number of different things based on your specialty in your work. So when I'm working with a parent, I'm very clear on the fact that they may hear some things, or I may say some things that may irritate them in some way. So I tell them, just kind of let me know if something comes up, because you can't hurt my feelings. What we need to do is work in real time. And I've had great success with that. Another thing that comes up in the parent consultation process is just understanding and honoring that limited confidentiality. So confidentiality is still there. It needs to be there for so many different reasons. Without confidentiality, then the child will is not as likely to lean into the process and be vulnerable. And if they are, and they do share something, and you share it directly with the parents or the caregivers, it could come back and be a negative in some way, and then they don't trust the process. So you do need to abide by the limited confidentiality, but be very clear with them that, you know, since they're a child, there is limited confidentiality. So here's what I say. What you say and express in here is confidential. That means it's just between us, unless I feel that you're a harm to yourself or others, and then we may need to reach out to others to get the help that we need. I will be talking to your parents about your work here, but not about the specifics. We'll be talking about ways to help make things better for you. Do you have any questions or concerns? And I do say that just like that, in front of the parent and the child, so that they're really clear that there's going to be a communications between the parent, but I'm not going to say anything specific. And I do make sure that as the consultation calls continue, I still lean on listening way more than I talk. Now, when I do talk, I talk about their progress and themes. So it may sound like, oh, there was a, it seemed like there's more connection in the sessions, or it seems like your child is seeking connection, or it seems like your child is seeking a sense of control. And then you can follow it up with, what are some ways that you can really insert opportunities for control in their life? So it may sound like, well, you could, you know, have choices. So would you like to take a bath now or in 10 minutes? Would you like cheese on your broccoli or no cheese? Would you like broccoli or would you like corn? Just anything that feels like a choice. So that's kind of the way it rolls. Or there may be a theme of security. It seems like your child is feeling very nervous. And I notice that they tensed up during certain parts of the play. It seems like they're looking for a space that they can feel calm in, a sense of peace and equilibrium. That's kind of what it sounds like when you talk in themes. And when you do a lot more listening than talking, then you can provide strategies, because it's not necessarily as important they know what goes on in session as much as you know how any changes that are happening and current concerns and current positive changes as well. One thing that it is important to keep in mind are there are a lot of ethical and legal considerations for this communication. So I know some families are right in the middle of divorce, or divorce is impending, or there's this high conflict. There may be some adoption situations that really get pretty difficult and strenuous about what you can communicate and what you can't. So it's important to educate yourself. Know what you can and can't say in your community in this situation, and follow those guidelines. I can't stress that enough. I know if you have any questions with that, definitely read any legal requirements, any ethical guidelines in your area. Follow the law, follow HIPAA, and really make sure you adhere to that. But suppose something comes up where you're like, I don't know. Am I allowed to say this or not? Or who do I talk to about this? You can reach out for supervision or consultation to someone that does know. You can also seek training on documentation. Or if it's something really urgent in nature and you need some absolute clarity, many of the liability insurance providers, they have options to consult with an attorney as well. When you speak with an attorney about these things, and if they are trained in mental health laws, then you can feel pretty confident and comfortable with their response. Okay, so the bread and butter of the parent consultation is really the resources. I love being able to share resources with my clients, ways to help. Now, not everybody's going to be receptive to them. So when you get a client or a client's parent that is ready and eager to read some books that you recommend, it's golden. It's so amazing when you recommend something that's helpful and they take in that information. It can boost their progress substantially. But sometimes they don't. Sometimes I send them YouTube videos, and sometimes I will, you know, hand them a book. I rarely do that anymore because of if I was expecting it back to use with other clients, a lot of times I wouldn't get it back. But here's the ones that I've had success with. Now, these are my top three favorite books in the whole just world of helping out parents. But there's so many more that are good, right? So Beyond Behaviors by Mona Delahick is so good. The way that she explains things from a neuroscience perspective in a way that just the average person can consume and understand. It's not jargony. It's very down to earth, but very clear. That one's real good. And The Yes Brain by Dr. Siegel and Dr. Bryson is really good. Now, honestly, anything from Dr. Siegel and Dr. Bryson or Dr. Siegel by himself is amazing. Amazing. The books and the trainings that he has out, that they have out together, is just phenomenal. So The Yes Brain is one that I recommend to parents. And the last one of those three, the Child-Parent Relationship Therapy, CPRT, that's a training that clinicians get. It's by far the most helpful training that I've ever had that supports my work as a child therapist. In that, you can find lots and lots and lots and lots of strategies, lots of specific, this is how you do it. They have the ACT model for helping set limits. So acknowledge the feeling, communicate the limit, target the alternative. There's real examples. There's so many tenets, like focus on the donut, not the hole, be the thermostat, not the thermometer. That training, that book specifically, is from Gary Landreth and Sue Bratton. It's top notch. I could not imagine doing the work that I do without having taken that training. I took it years ago at University of Central Florida with Dr. Delina Dillman-Taylor, and it's so good. Also, there's lots of handouts that I give to my parents that I'll either email it to them or if we're meeting in person. So I have the 7 Ways to Calm My Body handout. I even have a version to text them, a version, a PNG picture, and then I can email them the PDF. That gives 7 different ways to help, you know, somatically calm the body. I have some mindfulness techniques cards that they could use with their kids. There's all kinds of great resources out there. I do, and I feel like this is something, if you're a registered play therapist, is something that's naturally required. And as a licensed professional, you need to keep up on your training. But having play therapy specific trainings can really keep your skills sharp. The Association for Play Therapy's website has so many good options. There's really good trainings there. Also, seek out supervision and consultation even after it's required. I know we get so busy, right? We have so many things to do that it's hard to do them even if we have like some extra time we're tending to do something else. Like, that's not required. I still seek out supervision and consultation because it is part of that ethical decision-making process to really seek out supervision or consultation. But also, it just eases your mind. If you have a situation that you don't necessarily know what to do, or you're not sure if you can trust your judgment, or you need resources, reaching out to your supervisor or a supervisor or a consultant can make the world of difference. All right, thank you so much for listening to this episode about parent consultation. If you need any resources, we just recently, at the time of this recording, opened up Play Therapy Members Community. It is an amazing place where there's lots of informative and informational conversations. I know I just recently interviewed Julia Cook. She's the author of like Tattletongue and My Mouth is a Volcano. She talks to us about how she wrote her books and what inspires her and all of the different resources with her books. Also, The Power of Yet with Melissa Braun. Oh, there's so many good ones with Joanna Piskarski up in Canada. I think she's in Alberta. She talks about child therapy assessments just a little bit. Also, there's business support in play therapy members community for those that want to start a private play therapy practice or maybe want to write a book or teach an online course or host a summit or symposium. So many good things there. Also, there's a whole section with tips and techniques, demonstration, downloadables, the whole nine yards. And there's plenty of mini trainings, too, that you can get just bite-sized information. I know a lot of us are really strapped for time. We don't have a heck of a lot of time to be able to engage in these day-long, week-long trainings, but there may be a concept that is just invaluable. And if we can learn that in 1 hour or 30 minutes, it can be a game changer. That's all at playtherapycommunity.com. All right, until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode and explore our growing members library of play therapy related resources at www.playtherapycommunity.com. Prepare to be informed, equipped, inspired, and supported.